This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
My name's Nicole and I'm from Brisbane in Australia. I was sick and tired of feeling sick and tired and had just begun yet another attempt at a non-drinking stint when I discovered the Over the Influence podcasts. The timing couldn't have been better. I binge listened to them all, joined the OTI community and have never looked back. If, like me, you've tried and tried to put down the plonk, but even after some success, keep finding yourself pulled back into the mire, join us in the OTI community, where we all share our stories of what works and what doesn't and where we're currently at. Everyone's just so full of understanding and inspiration. In a few weeks, I'll reach a whole year without a single drop, and I can't thank the OTI community enough. You guys rock and make all the difference in the booze-free world.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Before we get into this week's episode of Over the Influence, we just wanted to give you a heads up and a bit of a trigger warning as to some of the subjects that we talk about with this week's guest. We talk a lot about mental health and it refers to having suicidal thoughts. So if you decide that this episode isn't for you, we completely understand that. If you are indeed happy to carry on listening, we hope you enjoy the episode. It's brilliant. Welcome to Over the Influence. It's absolutely fabulous to have you listening. We've got another amazing guest and we will be introducing you to today's guest in just a sec. If you are joining us maybe for the very first time, never listened to Over the Influence before, and you are dipping your toe into these sober, curious waters, or however you want to describe it, really good to have you listening. The feedback we get from the podcast is absolutely off the scale. It helps people that are considering a life without alcohol, that are still on an alcohol-free journey, you might still be drinking. Just take a listen to us, go back and fill your boots with all the other episodes. We bang on about sobriety and the unexpected joys of it, week in, week out. So my name is Sharon Hartley, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. I can say it officially now, I am 5 years alcohol-free. Never intended to do so. I didn't want to be sober because that would be boring. Took a break from alcohol, stuck with it, gave myself a chance, and not one aspect of my life hasn't improved since I stopped on, what was it, September the 3rd, 2018. It's flipping fab. I don't do this on my own, waiting patiently in the wings for me to stop wobbling on. Is Ben, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you. Well, I say fine. I got flipping COVID again, Shaz.
Oh, man alive.
And you know, we said this when you've had it a couple of times. I've had it once before, I think.
Yeah.
And I'm waking up in the morning thinking, it's exactly that same feeling. It's a hangover.
Not nice,
thinking,
is it?
I used to do this to myself all the time. Oh, it's not nice. But hey, I'm a big brave boy, Sharon. I'm doing my best.
Stay strong, Ben. On. Stay strong.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But I'm Ben. I'm 35. I live in Liverpool, originally from the Midlands, but been up here for nearly 10 years now. My wife is Jem. My baby is Leo. I've got two official stepchildren now because we got married a couple of weeks ago, Alfie and Millie. And yeah, for me, I wasn't an everyday drinker, but I was definitely a binge drinker. I go out on the weekend and, you know, fully intend to go out for a couple of pints after work. And then it didn't take much to twist my arm and it'd be a few pints more and a few pints more and a few pints more and a bag of chips on the way home and a hangover the next day and cancelled plans and etc. So for me, I removed alcohol and it just made me, and it's my favourite word, Chaz, and I know that you mocked me for it, but it just made me a more consistent person.
I love it.
And
I love it, Ben.
It really is, that's the most important thing for me. I like to be a man of my word. I like to say I'm going to do something and then go and do it. It's like probably my biggest value, actually. And it's something that I wasn't doing. I wasn't living it when I was a drinker, but I am now. That's just a small piece of one of the many benefits that make up this fabulous alcohol-free puzzle. There is, you know, it is a bit of a kind of, you got to try it. There's a few things that are a bit uncomfortable at first. There are a few things that aren't as you'd expect them to be. Overall, you put this thing together and it's just, Stunning. I love alcohol-free life. Weird analogy that I've not used before. You probably heard me stumble in the middle of that analogy.
I know. I've got to listen to that all day. I was curious to know as to where it was going, Ben.
Yeah, but anyway, let's ask our guest if they have any analogies for alcohol-free life, Chaz.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. Welcome to the podcast today. It is Matt Evans, currently residing in sunny Nuneaton. Matt, how the heck are you? And welcome to Over the Influence.
Howdy. All good down here. Life's mad as usual, kind of. I never have a boring day. There's certainly that. It's certainly gotten a hell of a lot more interesting since I've become alcohol-free and sobered up as well.
Well, before we get into all this, I know we've got a lot to talk about in this next hour or so. Before we do that, for the purpose of our listener, you're wearing a cap, okay? Great. And behind you on the wall, 6 caps on the wall. Talk to me about the caps. What's going on?
So I used to work abroad a lot and I used to do a lot of travelling. So where some people collect fridge magnets and some people collect mugs, I started collecting hats and it kind of got a little bit out of hand. So I've now got about 70 of them.
Oh, really?
So yeah, this is just a few. So I've recently moved office and I had to have some of them, but the rest of them are all down here in a pile that you can't see. So yeah, I've got about 70 hats from various places around the world, sporting events, and, you know, it's just kind of grown a little bit. So I now just buy them for fun, much to my wife's annoyance.
Brilliant. Thank you. I'm just dead nosy. I like to clear these things up. Matt, it's really good to actually be talking because I know that we've connected on Instagram and probably followed each other's stories and alcohol-free adventures over the years. Before we talk about where you are now and what you've got going on and all of the benefits that Ben's already touched on that come with alcohol-free life, I want to just refer back to an email that you sent us and rewind. And just one sentence here. Early in 2020, it all came to a head. What happened? What came to a head?
So early 2020, I was an absolute state. I mean, I was depressed, anxiety, suicidal, you know, really, really in a pickle myself. And, you know, to the outside world, it was like, oh, Matt's still the guy who can sort everyone's problems out and all that. My wife was talking to divorce lawyers. You know, we were in a real bad place. Yeah, it was not a lot of good going on, let's put it that way. Home life was pretty bad. Work, I was kind of doing that whole thing of, you know, masking it. Everything at work was kind of doing my job, doing fine. And that was all okay performance-wise. But me, I was a wreck. I was an absolute wreck. You know, I'm honest about it because if I'm honest, it allows other people to be. I was driving home at night, kind of working out how I can get rid of myself and not invalidate my insurance. You know, it was how can I kind of leave the money for the family without the insurance going, nope, not paying that out, while still doing that kind of thing. So, yeah, that's where I was. And it ended up one night in a police cell getting arrested after a very large amount of alcohol. And it all came horribly crashing down. I spent 3 weeks living at my mum's house. You know, I didn't have a clue what was going to go on with life. I was genuinely at the point where you just go, you have no idea where you're going and what to do with it. But the one thing I did know was I couldn't carry on drinking. It had taken me down to a point where I didn't know where life was going, but I had to make a choice that it wasn't doing me any good. And if I wanted anything to change, that was the biggest starting thing.
And how did it get there, Matt? Because what you're talking about there is wife and your relationship there being pretty bad. I mean, you're driving home thinking about, you know, how does it get there? How does it get to that point where it's so... almost, and please forgive me for using this word and tell me if I'm wrong, but it feels so hopeless at that point that there isn't a light at the end of the tunnel.
So I think the easiest way to explain it is it was all about me and it was all internal. You know, internally, I was putting so much pressure on myself about who I thought I wasn't. You know, I was comparing myself to anyone and everyone, you know, that whole social media pressure. I wasn't, you know, earning six figures. I wasn't driving the car that you see on Instagram or whatever it was at the time, Facebook back then. You know, it was always that I should be more, I should be having more, I should be giving my kids more, my wife more, I should be in a better job, I should look better. I literally put so much on myself that I didn't need to. I drove myself into the ground. And it wasn't from other people. You know, I look back on this and, you know, from where I am now, you know, I was living in that world of should. And we all know that should's a bit of a dodgy word and it doesn't do you any good as such. You know, I literally was just putting weight after weight on where I thought I should be and everything that I wasn't. I didn't recognise myself for anything good that I did do. It was just a sea of negativity. And it was on me.
And where did that start?
There's a lot around this that I've learned. So, you know, I'm currently waiting on a full diagnosis, but ADHD probably has a lot to play with it. You know, so my daughter's got ADHD and her psychiatrist has kind of talked to us and said, yeah, most of it's hereditary. And he's kind of looked at me and laughed and gone, wonder where. You know, I'm waiting on that. I've been through the first assessments and it all looks like it's a dead cert. So there's an awful lot around that where it's, you know, you can have some really good and some really bad kind of spikes. You know, you kind of get hits of where you're really high and where you're really low. So a lot of it was I kind of got myself into a low and then kept myself there. I kept spiraling around at these low points, and alcohol, as we know, naturally takes you down those paths as well. It's anxiety inducing. So as much as I used to try and use alcohol to cover up a lot of my negative thoughts, it just added to it. It was like adding fuel to it.
How old are you, Matt, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 7, if my kids ever ask. So I'm 42.
Okay. Because I'm just thinking about the kind of... I was watching a documentary on Netflix the other day, and they were talking about how in America, there was this kind of psychology in the 80s they were talking about, of the kind of, you know, the positive reinforcements of you can be whatever you want to be, you can achieve anything. And this kind of the hopeful outcome for that was that you'd have a load of empowered people coming into the workforce who feel like, yes, we can achieve this, we can do that. But then some of the actual negative side effects to that kind of thinking,
toxic positivity.
Well, you're talking about comparison, and I think it's just interesting kind of thinking about the advent of social media along with that as well, because I remember being at uni, so I would have been 18, because I was in my student halls when Facebook reached Warwick University, and it was at the point where only people who were at university could have a Facebook account. So that's the kind of early days of it. I'm now 35. So what's that? 17 years that social media's kind of been here. And you said you're 40?
I'm 42, yeah.
42. So therefore, I've got to try to do quick maths, but I've got COVID. So you're kind of, you're mid-20s, I suppose, when, you know, social media really starts to become a thing. Would you say that kind of comparison, I'm going to nick that line if you don't mind, that who I thought I wasn't, like, because it's so true. I wasn't earning six figures. I wasn't driving the car. I wasn't doing this. I'm seeing these people doing these things. I mean, we all know that what we, you know, social media, it's a highlights reel, isn't it? Don't judge your behind the scenes by everyone else's highlight reel. But would you say that, because I think we talk about social media today and we talk about kind of how it potentially affects the expectations of young people, for example. I worry about it. We've got Millie, who's 10, for example. She wants Instagram because her friends have got it and we've said, no, you can't have it yet. But we think about it in that context. But being a kind of a 20-something-year-old man and then going into your 30s and social media really starts to pick up, how did that affect you then? And would you say that it is a, you know, yes, you talked about ADHD. Would you say that that has been a contributing factor in this too?
Yeah, I think all of it is, you know, absolutely. You know, you're starting off your kind of professional career, you're getting into a job, and then you're starting to see all these kind of things, you know, every day online about that highlight reel. And it was kind of before everyone knew what it was. You know, a lot of people now, people see social media for what it is. We all start to acknowledge that it is that highlight reel. You know, no one ever really puts a load of shit on there that says, hey, guess who had a massive argument with their wife? You know, it doesn't happen. So it was kind of new. It was what people were just starting to get into a lot of. And yeah, you didn't realize or you didn't see it for what it truly was at the time. And so absolutely, I think it did start to create that expectation. I mean, I've always been hard on myself as well. I know that, you know, I've always done well in anything I've ever tried. And yet I've always tried to kind of do more. So I've always had a bit of a thing in the back of my head that if I'm doing something, I'm doing it well regardless. And I've always put the pressure on. But definitely there was an early social media use that obviously created some of it.
Is it the same for you, Shaz? Because as someone who would have got their first social media account in their 30s, do you think that you have a different relationship with it because of that?
I don't know. See, I'm quite... I've really enjoyed social media. Really enjoyed it. Less so as a mother of three in my 40s, when you've been out drinking and you've got friends tagging you in photos and dancing and, oh, look at Sharon making another arse of herself. Hated that side of it. Hated it. And actually now, when Facebook memories come up, you know, and it's from years ago now, I just press delete. I'm just not interested. I just want to get rid. But in terms of comparison and, you know, what I'm not or where I'm not in life or anything like that, I've never felt that, to be honest, because I know it's bollocks that people share a lot of, not untruths, but it's very one-sided. So I've never been bothered by what other people shared in terms of myself. However, for my own kids, interesting, obviously, what you said there, Ben, about your stepdaughter, Millie, only being 10. Mine are older now, but they've always had social media. And I've been very aware, particularly with our daughter, about the impact it could have and the role models you're seeing and this figure that you've got to have and these clothes that you have to wear and these locations where you've got to be sipping whatever, you know, cocktail in the sun. That side of it, yeah. For myself personally, no, I've never really been, I don't know, sucked in by the bobbins of it. Do you know what I mean?
I think that's got to be something to do with, you know, what stage you were at when you... You know, when it came out, when you were incorporating it into your life. I know this isn't a podcast. This is a podcast about alcohol-free life, not social media. But I think it's just a really interesting conversation because sometimes whatever's happening on social media, it's nothing to do with your immediate life. No. But it's impacting your life and it impacted your life, Matt, to the point where that was a contributing factor that led you to your lowest point. I mean... There's so much positive stuff we've got to talk about. Your email is absolutely packed. When you said, Sharon, at the beginning, I need to pick out a line here, I thought you were going to go for the one about the event where...
Oh, there's much I could have got at.
You're an absolute nutter, Matt. Just very quickly, we'll come back to this, but my alcohol-free life has ended up with me running a huge charity self-development event next year in Birmingham at the ICC, the International Convention Centre. I'm from Birmingham. I know the ICC. It's flipping huge. And you've put here, Matt, in a world first, they've actually hired out the entire venue to an individual person. They've never done that before. Look at me causing trouble. I thought that's what you were going to pick. What? Matt Evans have hired the entire ICC. We've got to come on to this positive stuff because there's loads. But before we do, you're at the lowest point then. You're living with your mom.
Yep.
What did you do next?
It was... by any means necessary, not drinking. I knew that if I wanted to kind of get my family back and pull it back together, I had to kind of get to a point where it was out of my life. I actually went to AA for a few weeks and honestly, didn't work for me. I genuinely didn't enjoy it. I'm not sure, I don't know whether some people enjoy it or not. Genuinely didn't enjoy it because it was always that, you're not drinking, but you're going somewhere talking about drink and going over all the bad stuff about what alcohol was and did to you. And it felt to me like a bungee cord. It was like, you know, you're going out, you're not drinking, and then you go back to this place and then you talk about how bad drink is and how bad you were, and it's always like, I was like, no, that isn't what I want. I don't want to be not drinking and yet always talking about how bad I was when I was drinking. But, you know, I gave it a try. For me, I did an awful lot of kind of self-analysis. I'm kind of an engineering background. I've got an analytical brain. I tore myself to shreds, actually. I went through some CBT with a counsellor. I started doing a lot of personal development work. And yeah, I pulled myself apart to try and understand why I was drinking so much, what it was giving me, what I was covering up, you know, and who I was being with that. I really kind of dug into myself a lot to understand why and what I thought it was giving me. And don't get me wrong, part of it was just, it was a habit, you know, come home, start drinking, there's all that, you know, I quite like having a cold beer, it's refreshing, I can go with that as well. But there was also a lot of using it as a tool to mask up all the thoughts, and then it was, well, why was I thinking them in the first place? So, yeah, the thing for me was, I got into the why, what good did I think it was doing me? And it was kind of fortuitous timing, you know, I stopped drinking at the end of February. Middle of March was when we had lockdown, and it was almost the best thing ever that it put everyone kind of into these little bubbles away from the world, and it almost gave me a lot of time and clear space away from anything that you might class as triggers and people and events, that meant I could really have a lot of really good thinking time without external influences, including alcohol.
As Ben mentioned, I mean, your email's phenomenal, and we will get on to talking about all this brilliant, brilliant stuff, Matt. It's just so good. It's just another example of how your world opens up when you make this one decision. You remove this one thing that changes everything. And we had a guest on the podcast last week, one of our community members, Graham, and he's just over a year alcohol-free now. And it was amazing to hear him share how alcohol destroyed his mental health. And in so many cases, I mean, you're nodding along there, we hear this where, you know, in your email, again, we keep referring back to it, but it's just so chock full of information. You talk about anxiety, depression, suicidal thoughts, 14 Stellas a night with an extra JD. You think it's helping. I know what I'll do while I'm feeling really low. I'll drink my way through this. And it's a phrase we use a lot, it's like pouring petrol on a fire. When did you realise, Matt, that the drinking was destroying your mental health rather than helping it?
Maybe sounds weird, actually, that it was only after I stopped and I realised how much better I was feeling without it, because I was getting myself into a position where it was covering up so much of those thoughts, I was using it to drown it all out. So I'd never contemplated how bad it was making it, because I thought it was helping at the time. You know, it was, I want to shut my brain up, therefore I'll just comatose it. And it was only after, and I mean quite a while after as well, we're talking like, you know, the 3, 4, 5 kind of months, it was after a real prolonged spell that I kind of saw that lift, and I could look back and go, wow, this is such a difference. You know, so it was never that I thought it was a problem. Well, I knew it was a problem, don't get me wrong. But it was never that I kind of correlated my mental health with alcohol until it had gone.
And that's the thing, isn't it? That's the frustration, I suppose, in many ways. Because, you know, we always say you remove alcohol, you gain all this, everything changes. But while you're still drinking, it's virtually impossible to believe and to have that hope. And so in order to experience the things that people share and the stories of recovery and the changes that come with it, you've got to go to the other side. You've got to not drink, haven't you? And it can be this vicious circle that you're just trapped in.
It's one of those where, you know, I had people saying to me, and it was the people closest to me, you know, my wife, my mum, you know, they were all saying about how drinking's no good for you. And, you know, obviously I could be a bit of an arse as well after drinking, or fall asleep at 7 o'clock in front of the TV. I was tired.
Can't
Who's that in the background there, Matt?
That's the wife opposite me in the office.
And what word did she use then?
I said half four.
Half four, not seven.
Half four, you know what I thought she said, Matt? I thought she said arsehole.
That as well, yeah.
I was just quieter under my breath.
Lovely to meet you, Mrs. Evans. Lovely to chat.
Hiya.
So, yeah, it is that thing where, you know, you've got your own story. You know, you justify your own drinking. Everyone kind of goes down that road of... You're not me. Don't tell me who I am and what I'm thinking. You don't know any better. You know, this is me and I know best for what I am and what I need. People often don't want to listen to it. And I think, you know, this is partly why I'm so kind of keen on sharing the story. And like, I did 3 years ago on Facebook, it really caused a bit of a stir, because it was someone like me who seemed to be all right and not be in that position, and then suddenly people go, oh shit, if he can get like that, oh hang on, and it gives other people the permission to actually come out and acknowledge it and understand that it's okay to say that you've got these problems and that you might need some help. But a lot of people don't want to acknowledge it. No matter what they think, they will always create their own story to justify their own drinking.
And you know why, Matt? It's because what you said earlier about how you went into this going, right, I need to remove the alcohol, but then also there's some of the deeper work I need to do here. And I think that's the bit that scares people. And you know what? Actually, it's also the bit, I think, that knocks people off who are doing really well. Like, let's say that someone starts off an alcohol-free adventure, journey, whatever you want to call it. And then actually things happen in their life that maybe kind of triggers for them drinking before. But without the alcohol, you can't escape it. You have got to confront it head on. And I think that's a really tricky part of the process. And I think it's important to talk about. I think it's important to say it isn't just the magic. You know, removing alcohol is a very flipping difficult thing to do, because everywhere you look in society, it's aggressively marketed at us. It's available everywhere. I can go and get a pint within 2 minutes from my front door if I wanted one. That's difficult. But then there's also the personally, it's the societal part, but that personally difficult bit, which is the kind of confronting nature of, why did I drink? So I think, yeah, sorry, you want to jump in?
I was going to say, absolutely, because I mean, you know, I've ended up now in a position where I actually coach people and help people out kind of through this alcohol journey. And what I say is, I've never found anyone where alcohol's the actual problem. Alcohol is always how they cover up something that they can't deal with mentally or don't want to deal with mentally, you know, just like me. You know, it was a crutch, it was a cover up, it was everything other than the problem. It was just that I was using it as a really bad answer to my problem. And, you know, I'll admit, even in my first few months, you know, I faced a few times where I was like, oh, bollocks to this, you know, life's shit. And, you know, it was never all roses from day one. You know, there was one day I remember, you know, one of the biggest triggers that a lot of guys have is they'll have a bust up with their missus and it'll be, oh, whatever, I'm off to the pub. You know, I remember...
Careful what you say, Matt. Careful what you say.
She's listening. The present she's company, she's Matt. Sitting next to you.
She can throw things at me as well. I'm okay.
got a hard head.
But yeah, you know, we had a real Barney one day, and I stormed out the house and I got one on me to the point where that would have been, I'm off to the pub. Yeah. It was so easy to go, sod this, don't care, whatever. And actually, one of the things that I always say is, you know, having a support network around you and don't do this alone is huge. Because I actually went for a walk and I rang my friend Tom. He's like my partner in sober crime. And we had a long chat, and literally just having that conversation is what kind of pulled me down from a ledge. And I still say to this day to him that was such a turning point in such a big flare up that I didn't go and drink, that I still say it's probably what kept me on the straight and narrow and could have flung me off the whole journey. Yeah, so it isn't all roses, and it is normally, alcohol is never an answer, but people think it is.
It takes constant work, because that scenario you've just shared, life still goes on. Of course it does. There's difficulties at work, there's relationships, whatever it might be, whatever your trigger is, the easiest thing is to go, ah, sod it. Because in your brain, it's all screaming at you. Everything you've ever learned over however many years you've been drinking, the strength it takes at that moment to actually go, right, hang on, I'm going to do this differently. I'm going to do it differently. In your case, thank God for your mate Tom. You went for a walk. You changed it all. It could have gone in a very different direction, couldn't it?
And absolutely. And I guess one of the things that we always kind of face is that you get people think that, you know, when you're, you know, like we are, quite a few years alcohol-free and it's all fine and dandy and you never think about it. You always have the thought and you always have the option. Like you say, life goes on. Alcohol is always around. It's always in your face. It's always promoted. And no matter where you go, it will always be a choice. And for me, it's about how people get to the point where they understand that it's always a choice, and they proactively choose how they live their life, and they don't make it a default. You know, I see alcohol around me every day. We were away in Tenerife, start of August. Honestly, boiling hot, down by the beach, and there was loads of, you know, 150 euros for a cold pint. And I was like, I could murder one of them, and I know I could have gone and had one, but if they had alcohol-free ones, I might have been tempted. But yeah, even now, I kind of look at it and go, I'd actually quite fancy a cold beer, but then I go, yeah, I actually have the life I want. I don't want to get on that slippy slope. It's always a choice, but you always deal with it in a much better, more proactive manner.
We're just going to take a really quick break from this chat with Matt. Hey, it rhymes. This chat with Matt. And I say it week in, week out. We are going to take a really, really quick... It just amuses me.
Little things, yeah, yeah.
It is the little things. And I think I need to just mix up what I'm saying here. You know, we are going to take a really quick break. We lie. We always lie at this bit. It's never a quick break. Shall we make it a quick break?
Let's make it. Let's make it happen. Right.
Okay, let's do that. Very quickly. She says very quickly. It's not already. If you want more information about our community, we would love you to get involved. You're hearing from Matt about the changes to his life since he removed alcohol. You'll be hearing about more big changes coming up in this episode. I'm sure you've already listened to last week's episode with community member Graham and the changes that he talked about. Graham gave OTI a chance. He gave himself a chance. We say it so much. It lifts the lid on your world. It brings you real confidence, removing booze. Graham is now one of our community Zoom hosts. And what happens with regards to the Zooms, it's either myself that hosts them or Ben that hosts them, or we've got members that are around 1 year alcohol free, because what we're finding is that people just love it that flipping much. They want to do more, they want to get involved, they want to give back to the community. So when you join OTI, and if you're thinking, what's it going to be like, where's it going to lead, who knows, who flipping knows, come and try it, jump on a Zoom call, meet some like-minded people, see if it's for you, and who knows, you could be hosting Zoom calls in however many weeks or months' time, and be a massive part of what we do at Over the Influence. They're good, isn't it, Ben? Isn't it good?
It is. You've said everything apart from go to overtheinfluence.co.uk. That's all we need to say now. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk. All the info's there. Have a look. Right, back to the episode.
Let's get back to the chat with Matt.
Okay, so you've chosen a different life, Matt, and this life sounds quite busy. Let's talk about this daft idea you got about hiring the entire ICC in Birmingham. What's the capacity of that place, Matt? It's got to be thousands and thousands, hasn't it?
So actually, okay, so it's got two capacities. There's two massive halls. I've hired both of them, but we're aiming for 1,500 people. So
amazing. Of course you have.
Amazing. Great. Tell us all about it. Well, you know what? Actually, let me reframe that. Tell us about the many positive things that have happened as a result of you deciding to remove booze 3 years ago, including this nuts idea about hiring out the entire ICC. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
How long have you got?
Capacity 50. Yeah, yeah, okay.
Okay, so the ICC thing, I'll start with that. You have to rewind quite a bit to get to where this is. So when I first started on my whole sober journey, I was involved in kind of, because it was COVID as well, you didn't have a lot of groups and live people. I was online quite a lot, and I was in an online group on Facebook where I met my friend Tom. We became very good friends and lifelong, forever will be now. And through these kind of Facebook groups, as I kind of got more and more behind me, I've always kind of had a mentoring and coaching type capacity. So as I got myself through this sober journey, I started actually helping a lot of other people. One of the people that I actually helped was a professional life coach. And she said to me, she was like, you know, how are you not doing this? And me and her became really good friends. And then she sent me a book that said, and she said, you have to read this book. It's about the guy in America who's got a tag called The Ultimate Coach, Steve Hardison. And I read it and I was like, this is nuts. And I actually ended up calling this guy Steve and having a chat with him. He said to me, well, there's this online Facebook group that started off, you know, with the launch of the book. His book had just been launched at the time. So I read it in like November, December, this group was launched. And I said, well, I've helped run some big groups. Do you want some help? And they were like, yeah, sure. Someone had the idea to do like a book launch event in the UK. And they said, who's up for helping? So again, with my kind of background, I've done project management. I said, all right, well, if you want help, I'll project manage it. And when are you thinking of doing it? And they said, oh, in 3 months. I was like, oh, sugar. So they came up with this idea to do like a book launch in London. And it was designed to be a charity event and about 500 people. So we ended up kind of having all sorts of shenanigans. There was we didn't know where the hell we were going to do it. We didn't know who was going to be turning up and all sorts. And there was like a group of us who got together and we ended up filling one of the kind of best hotels in London, the Royal Lancaster, with 500 people for a 500 person book launch. And £26,000 ended up going to charity. So, and it went to a small charity in London called Dad's House, who, you know, like it supports single parents. It started off single dads and they do an awful lot of help in a London. Everyone thinks it's a minted place. It's not that minted. So yeah, we got together. A couple of us who had run that event, we'd all got the itch to do something bigger and say, can we do something more? So yeah, in April this year, we pushed the button and said, let's go. So I talked to the ICC and said, can we hire you? And they went, we're not sure. So they had to go and talk to their people. And we've ended up hiring the ICC to do the next charity event that instead of 500 people is going to be 1,500 people, all around the whole coaching principle of what Steve does in the US and a few other people that are in the coaching world around who are you being. So they talk about who you're being is the precursor to what you do. So, you know, you get all these coaches who kind of talk about do this, do that, do the other. Whereas with Steve and, you know, the other people that are involved in kind of this work, they talk about who are you being before you even do anything. It's be, do, right. Have. It's quite a simple philosophy. And, you know, people like, if anyone's read Stephen Covey, he talks about it. It's been around for years, but these people put it into a very easy manner.
So kind of like a values-based thing, you know, before you can decide where you're going, you've got to kind of align with the person you want to be.
Who are you? Yeah. And there's this whole thing. I think before I said, actually, one of the things you highlighted was working out who I wasn't. You know, I used to kind of say everything I wasn't, this is all about how you judge yourself. You know, I mean, I know that I used to judge myself for being all these kind of things in a really bad manner. And it talks about how you get rid of a lot of your judgments and then how you create who you want to be. It flips your mentality.
Can I just jump in and ask, Sharon, who are you?
I knew you were going to do this to me.
We've been working together too long now.
No, I knew you would ask me this question. I can't answer it because one, you put me right on the spot. Two, I don't want to waste any time talking about myself. Three, this is Matt's episode. So,
okay. Go on then.
So I was going to ask Matt
that question. Matt, who are you?
So I'm loved and I am always worthy of that, both from myself and others. I'm audacious, bold and passionate in that which I choose to be or that which I ask for. I'm faithfully in love with integrity and unwavering commitment to my stunning and beautiful wife, Kate. I'm the best and most desirable husband there could ever be for my amazing, incredible, sexy wife, without doubt. I am compassion, fun and love as an example to our three perfect children. I am the creator of what I desire and I am patiently in flow with the timing that life delivers this to me. I'm grateful for everything, including the lessons. I'm not in fear of the future. I'm an authentic leader in every time and place for others and myself. I'm the quarterback of great people, and all are great. I win when they do. I'm an honest and reliable friend, and everyone is a friend. I am unconventional excellence. I bring possibilities to the party, and I do it with love. I'm living in service with no need of return. I am better than I ever give myself credit for. I am enough and never too much. I am me.
Oh, man alive.
And that is part of the thing that, you know, this work does with people, that it gets you out of what you tell yourself you're not. It gets you to stop judging yourself and create yourself and give yourself a place to come from. And it gives you a reset.
I did not know where this episode was going to go. And this is true of every episode, week in, week out. As Ben always says, before we press record, we'll follow the tangents. But the story within this chat, you began by saying, you know, who you weren't, what you were not achieving, what you weren't driving, the money you weren't earning. And we'll be wrapping it up shortly. And we're nearly at the end of the episode now. And to hear you share everything that you are with such confidence and honesty. And correct me if I'm wrong here, you've said all that in front of your wife as well, who's sharing the same room with you while you're recording. I just thought that was fantastic. Amazing.
And that's the thing, you know, it's if I'd known all that, you know, all the kind of like I say, that whole personal development journey for me, it started 3.5 years ago. It's come through to this point, to the point where I'm working with some incredible people around the world. You know, the lessons it has taught me, you know, part of that whole alcohol-free journey, my alcohol-free journey has led me down this path to saying yes to more, to being open to more. You know, I could have kind of dismissed everything as being, you know, hubbub and whatever, but actually it's got me to a point where, you know what, it's the most powerful work I've ever done. And it has led me down so many kind of places that are just incredible. You know, my relationship and how I show up with my wife now and my kids and in work, I couldn't have ever dreamed of being where I am now. You know, I'm in the best job I've ever been in. I can be brash and honest about it. You know, my income has doubled. I've got to where I used to want to be and further, you know, 3-4 years ago, where I was kind of like, oh, I'm not earning this and I don't have this job and I wish I was and I should be more. I'm there. And now I'm just like, okay, I'm here, I'm happy, and where next? And it's not that I'm wanting for where next, but I'm just excited about where it can be.
Is it that you've earned more, Matt, or have you just bought less hats in the last financial year, would you say?
Bought more hats.
Because he can.
I can fund my hat problem properly.
Because you're talking then about the future, and actually that's the bit I want to pick up on. From what would you call that, by the way? Is that your values? Is that your, like, what would you call the, what you just read to us?
You can call it your document, you can call it your declaration.
Let's go with declaration.
It's who I am.
That sounds cool.
And can I just very quickly jump in there, because you did not know that Ben was going to ask you that question. Who are you? So do you have that as a mantra, like printed off? Is it on your laptop? Is it something that you've got in your kitchen?
I have that on my iPad and I can remember most of it off by heart. Not quite.
Yeah. Brilliant.
It's impressive.
Brilliant.
But so in your declaration, then, there's one bit I wanted to pick up on. You started to talk about it then. What did you mean by I'm not in fear of the future?
So, you know, I used to always be worrying about what if. I genuinely was kind of like, what if this, what if that, what if the sky falls down? Maybe that's part of my engineering brain again. You know, you're always looking for what could go wrong. But I know that no matter what happens, life's going to be good.
But no one can know that. No one can know that, can you? Like I'm playing a bit of devil's advocate here, Matt. But you can't know that life's always going to be good. Life's always going to throw challenges, and
life is what life is, and you get to choose how you look at it. And you know what? There's some things you just can't affect, and you make the most of regardless. And therefore, that's why I'm not in fear of it. I know that no matter what happens, I will always do my best to kind of make the most of every moment. I will always look after my wife and my kids, regardless of anything that ever happens, you know. And some things you can't control. So not being in fear of the future means that I'm going to do everything I can to create the best possible future for me and everyone around me. And I know that regardless of what happens, it'll be all right.
Love it. It's simple, isn't it? But simple but effective. You know, you're right. It's very stoic, actually. This is advice and thoughts that have gone back thousands of years, isn't it? Like we've had this knowledge for a really long time.
And the other bit about it is that I used to waste so much mental time and capacity worrying about the what ifs that, Jesus Christ, I was missing out on the now.
And that's the thing, isn't it, in sobriety. And what you were saying before as well, where you are now, you know, the career progression, the strength in relationships, all of it. It's that saying that comes up a lot on this pod and in our community. Sobriety delivers everything that alcohol promised.
I think I did actually miss one little bit out, actually, in terms of what it also gave me. If he ever listens to this in 18 years, he'll probably kill me. But yeah, I mean, as a kind of sounds really certain. Here's one for the guys, maybe. But yeah, 1 year into me being sober, we actually decided to have a real party and we had our little one. So we had two little girls before, and at the 1 year mark, Kate got pregnant with our little boy, Will.
Oh, that's so cute. Matt Evans.
But baby, it's my soberversary. It springs to mind.
One year sober, fancy one more kind of thing. And so 9 months after, upturn Will.
I mean, congratulations.
When you say about what being sober gives you, it gave me my little dude.
Oh, man. That is so good. I mean, we have people celebrating the community. They go up mountains and they might have a piece of cake or, you know, a massage. And there's Matt living his best life.
Graham, who we had on last week, he spent his 1 year freezing his off on the top of Ben Nevis, didn't he, with you, Shaz?
Yeah. I mean, no better way to celebrate.
He'll be listening to this episode furious. Yeah.
Love that, Matt. We're running out of time, Matt. It's been a fascinating chat. Really enjoyed it. Thank you. Before you go, I just want you to give this event that's taking place in Birmingham a big old plug. If people want to get involved, how can they do that? When's it happening? And where's all the info?
Okay, so the current landing page is on Eventbrite. So if you search for the Ultimate Birmingham event, that will show up. It is May the 25th and 26th. It's a Saturday and Sunday at the ICC next year in 2024. It is 2 days of some of the world's best coaches, entrepreneurs and artists. We've got a real mixed lineup. It's going to be kind of some seminars. It's going to be some interactive workshops. There's going to be quite a good party on the Saturday night as well. And it really is for anyone who's interested in learning about, you know, who they are, how they judge themselves, who they want to be in the future. You know, this whole thing has pulled me out of where I was and now who I am. This is how we do it in a really condensed manner. Anyone who has got any real desire to be their best self, we've got 2 days for them. And the best part is all of the money, and I mean all of it, none of us are taking a penny out of it. All the speakers are doing it for free. They're all flying in from Japan, America, wherever they're coming from. We've got a worldwide group of people. They're all doing it for free because all of the money is going to Birmingham Children's Hospital, which is where my daughter had her cochlear implants. So, you know, that's the whole thing. So the aim is to fill the whole room, give all the money to charity and do some good for people.
It sounds absolutely amazing. We wish you loads of luck with the event. And Matt Evans, it's been an absolute pleasure finding out exactly who you are. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure being on it. I've loved it.
Huge thanks to Matt Evans from Nuneaton for sharing his story with us and Over the Influence. If you do want more info about that big old event that's happening next May in Birmingham, May 2024, and you've missed any of the contact info, just ping us an email, otihq@overtheinfluence.co.uk. And you can use that email address or you can get in touch with Ben direct, ben@sharon@overtheinfluence.co.uk. If you want us to answer any questions at all, put any fears or anxieties to bed about our fan-flipping-tastic community. We seem to have had a flurry of sign-ups on the back of our Ben Nevis trip. People getting in touch saying, what do you do? How can I get involved? Can I come hiking with you? Yes, you absolutely can. You can do it all. But you need to do it as a member and we will welcome you with open arms. We understand it can feel weird. It can feel a little bit sort of uncomfortable. But once you've tried it, and you've thought, you know what, this isn't so bad, it could well be the missing piece to your alcohol-free jigsaw. Ben, if somebody's interested, what do they need to do?
So if you're weird and want to feel uncomfortable, come to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Yeah.
That is overtheinfluence.co.uk. All the info is on there. Just click the join us, join our community bit, and have a little look, and you can see all the different things that you get, because obviously you get the forums, you get the Zoom calls, you also get the premium podcast. There's all sorts of stuff that you get. Are we going to talk about the premium podcast and what we're talking about this? It's got a bit weird recently, hasn't it? It's supposed to be premium alcohol-free content, but you would have heard Sharon's daughter, Ella, on the podcast a few weeks ago. On the podcast, she said, oh, look, I've only got 20 minutes. I've got a big job interview. Look, long story short, she got the job. We talk all about it on the premium podcast, and we're going. She's got a job on a yacht. It's amazing. Me and Shaz have decided that we want to go. So we're creating Yacht FM, the radio station. It's ridiculous. There is some premium alcohol-free content in there as well. But a lot of this week's conversation is about our new radio station that doesn't exist, but we're hoping it will, Yacht FM. What kind of content could we produce all day, every day?
I was going to say it's got legs. See, there's a joke there is about sea legs. Yeah. Finding your sea. This sort of nonsense and gubbins you can hear week in, week out on the premium podcast. So if you don't already subscribe to that and you're not a community member, treat yourself to a free trial. If you want to know what the update is, what the latest goss is, we lift the rather grubby curtain behind Over the Influence. It's like one of those minging shower curtains that you get in a really cheap and nasty hotel. You know, with like a little bit of mould on the bottom. Blah, bit like that. We lift the grubby shower curtain.
Glamorous. It is. It's great.
Click the free trial button on the Apple Podcast channel and you can fill your boots for 7 days. And if you like it, stick with it because it's only £5 a month and it's dead good. We're not saying that. The feedback last week, the feedback this week and the feedback from many, many weeks ago, it's ace. It's really, really good.
Right.
Did we say that we keep this bit short?
Yeah.
It wasn't. Thank you for listening as always. If you want more info about the community, overtheinfluence.co.uk. Or ping us an email, otihq@overtheinfluence.co.uk. Thank you for your company this week. We will be back same time next week. next week.